Why work harder when you can work smarter? I mean, we're all looking for ways to make work and life just a little bit easier. Enter the Ford F-150 truck. It helps you get the job done in the smartest way possible. Have you seen the Pro Access tailgate? It improves access to the bed and cargo, which makes it easier to load in tight spaces. Think about the time and hassle you'll save with that feature alone. And I haven't even mentioned the mobile power source, Pro Power On Board. You can power up to 7.2 kilowatts outside your F-150. You're already thinking about all the ways you can put that to use, aren't you? See, I told you, smarter. Tough this smart can only be called F-150. Find your local Ford dealer at Ford.com. Pro Access tailgate available starting spring 2024. See owner's manual for important operating instructions. This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Plus, auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Quote now at Progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations. Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And we are ending off the year by getting our rock and roll on today with a great comeback story, a feel-good story about a heavy metal band that kind of slipped through the cracks. I did a documentary on this band. The band is called Siren. They're from Brandon, Florida. They got started in the early 80s. They broke up a few years later due to chicanery, as usually happens between some bands. But through some incredible twists of fate, they got an offer to play a huge festival in Germany 30 years later, where they had a huge fan base that they did not know about, and they found themselves on stage playing at the Keep It True Festival, like I said, 30 years later. Dreams never die. It's an incredible story, and we captured it all for the new documentary. I'm too old for this shit. A heavy metal fairy tale. I produced it, and Nathan Mowry, who directed the Judas video, Burn Me Out, Nowhere to Run, Painless, directed this documentary as well. I produced it, like I said. I sent Nathan to Germany with Siren to capture all the footage from their trip to play the Keep It True Festival in 2018. Because, like I said, either when I heard about this, I thought it's either going to be a complete disaster or it's going to be one of the best feel-good stories you could ever see. And it was one of the best feel-good stories you can see. And the documentary is finally done. I'm too old for this shit. And you can pre-order it now on iTunes. And if you wait from January 1st to the 3rd, it's going to be on sale for $6.99 on iTunes. You're not going to want to miss this documentary. Eli Roth said it's one of the best documentaries he's seen in a long time. Charlie Benanti loved it. Mike Portnoy loved it. So check out this documentary. Pre-order it now. It actually is released on January 5th. And like I said, it's $12.99 currently. If you wait until January 1st, for the 2nd and the 3rd, it will be $6.99, and you get a chance to see this amazing piece of filmmaking. I'm very proud of it. My first documentary that I've produced. So to give you a little background of it and to kind of get you psyched up for the documentary, I got a good friend, Ed Aborn, the drummer of Siren, and he actually appeared on our Halloween episode, giving his favorite Halloween movies. Singer Doug Lee and guitar player Todd Grubbs are here to share the amazing story about dreams coming true unexpectedly, and to talk about the making of the documentary, Siren's newfound future as well. A little inspiration for the new year, ending it off on a good note. Lord knows we need it. And a reminder to never give up on your dreams, because things can always, always happen to you in a good way. So Siren on Talk is Jericho, starting now. So after many years, I guess now, of editing and filming and deal making, we finally have the release of I'm Too Old for This Shit, the heavy metal fairy tale of Siren. And we're here with Ed Aborn and Todd Grubbs and Doug Lee, who are all from Siren, and they're all going to be big-time movie stars now that the documentary is out.
That's right.
How does it feel to actually have it up and ready and there for people to watch?
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, like you mentioned, it's been a couple years since we had this amazing experience to come back together. And it's phenomenal that it's real now. It's actually going to be a thing that people can see and check out. I mean, we lived it, but now people can live it with us.
It's exciting because it's probably one of the bigger things that I've ever been involved in. I think it's going to be pretty big. I think I'm going to be a big star real soon.
Finally got your chance.
Right.
I think it's absolutely the biggest thing we've ever been involved in.
Yeah.
And it is exciting.
It's cool to me because, I mean, just to kind of tell the backstory, I've known Ed for the better part of 20 years, if not a little bit longer. And we've recorded songs at your place, recorded Fozzy vocals at your house. Like I said, watched movies, been to concerts. And I knew that you were in a band, but we were all in bands when we were kids. Right. You know, my band was Scimitar. You see the siren picture up on the wall. And I never realized kind of the full story behind it. And that's why when this thing started coming to fruition, I couldn't believe it at first. Because I was like, what? Like, your band actually has some steam? So talk a little bit about how Siren started back in the day before we get into this whole fantastic story, which I, as soon as I heard it, decided needed to be on Celluloid, shall we say.
Sure. As you mentioned, you know, we all had our bands back in the day. And mine and Doug's was Siren. And we started in 1981, I believe, is when it first kicked up, and did the usual band thing, warehouses, houses, rehearsal spaces.
But let me just interject, too. This is in Brandon, Florida, right, which at one point in time was kind of, as Nasty Ronnie says in the movie, the heavy metal capital of the world. I wouldn't go that far, but like there was a lot of bands that came out of that scene in Brandon, to the point where I grew up in Winnipeg, Manitoba. Mm-hmm. True. And one of the towns close to Winnipeg is called Brandon. So I was like, oh, Brandon, Manitoba, Brandon, Florida. So I knew Nasty Savage. I knew about Obituary and Dark Angel and, you know, all the bands that came from that area. So it was a really big scene at the time.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was a really exciting time in general for metal because everything was young. We had lots of bands coming in. It was great to go to an old record store and discover bands. And, you know, we had the dream. We had the dream to try to be one of those bands, you know, that we liked. So we went down the typical path of rehearsing, mostly playing covers, lots of covers from our influences, Judas Priest, Iron Maiden, Accept, you know, all those guys. And then started to dabble in originals. And our first single, Metro Mercenary, we did in 1984. That was our demo. And we decided to, you know, go the big time way. And rather than doing a cassette, which was the norm of the time, we said, we're going to do vinyl. Even though, you know, we've got no label, we're just us, we're going to put out a single. So we put out a 2-song single.
How did you do that, putting it on vinyl?
I don't know. We just wanted to go big. We wanted to do something that nobody else was doing. And everybody else had the cassette. So we thought we'd go with the vinyl. And
but it's easy to put it on a cassette. I said, did you take it to a record plant or something?
Yeah,
or?
Actually, we had to send it out and get it pressed, and then they sent back the lead acetate, you know, which was cool. On a full-size disc.
Which was exciting.
It was amazing to see that.
Yeah. Even to this day, just to actually see something on vinyl is so much more, like, real than it's streaming on iTunes or, you know, to hold that vinyl in your hand, it always has some weight to it.
Yeah, because this was our first time in the studio, and we went into, you know, an 8-track studio. Yes, that's 8 full tracks to capture the magnificence
of our
sound.
You got to split it like the Beatles did to get to 64.
Exactly. Right. So we recorded the songs and, you know, in this little studio, GDM Studios. And then I remember it was just really exciting. A couple months later when those records came back from the plant and we sat in your living room, Doug, and assembled them. We, you know, had to paper inserts that we did with like plastic sleeves and wrapped, you know, folded.
Oh, really? You had to actually put the record into the paper thing?
Yeah. Yeah. We did that and sat in his living room. And like you said, Chris, it was that feeling of holding an actual record, you know, that was you, that was the, you know, because until that time, it wasn't like today where you can record something yourself and the world can hear it tomorrow. Mm-hmm. It was something that was just like your heroes. It was, you're on the same playing field now. It's like, I've got a record just like my Iron Maiden record.
Well, but the thing is, too, like you mentioned the heroes and you mentioned in the documentary about how back in those days, fanzines and sending tapes out and stuff. And that's how Lars got Metallica around back in the day. And
you were in magazines with them. Yeah.
The exact same time frame. Yeah. I mean, you're talking 1981, 82.
Yeah.
They could have seen Siren next to who the fuck is Metallica?
Yeah.
You know, what does that mean, right?
No, absolutely. Because that, yeah, I remember
definitely we still, the same time frame. Yeah.
We have the fanzines with us, with those bands, you know, in them.
That made us feel even better.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's the thing. And you're exactly right. That was what we did. Once we had the single, then Doug and I said, all right, now, and props again to Nasty Ronnie of Nasty Savage. Got to give him because they were kind of like always a couple steps ahead. They were
on Metal Blade Records. Right. Like I said, you could get their record in Winnipeg.
And this is before they were signed. So
oh, gotcha.
This was 84. But again, they were on that next level. But Ronnie was never the kind to be selfish with this stuff. It wasn't like, I got this list of fanzines and my contacts, I'm not going to share them. He literally gave me his handwritten list, a handwritten copy of all his fanzine contacts.
Yeah, he was very cool. He did the same thing for me.
Did he? Yeah. Did he with Atomic mm-hmm. Opera? Okay.
Mm-hmm. What was your band called at the time?
Atomic Opera.
Yeah. So you were in another band in the yeah. same scene.
Yeah, I think exactly. We played gigs with Siren back then.
I think there was at least one.
Yeah.
Gotta love Atomic Opera, oh, Siren, Scimitar. Yeah. How rock and roll are we, right?
Yeah.
And so it took that list, and once we had the record, put out, you know, together a little bio sheet, and literally just started flinging the packages through the mail. Everything was old school. You couldn't just, you know, email something over.
So you're going to the post office and sending it to all across the state. Are you sending it to overseas?
Overseas.
Absolutely.
Germany.
Everywhere. South America.
So if you had, like, you know, Schwarzkopf Records in Hamburg, Germany, you'd send them a copy.
And the fanzines. Like, because that gotcha. Was, we really didn't approach many labels because it was kind of like.
The fanzines.
It was the fanzines and just trying to get them. And what was amazing, and even though holding the record was a thrill, that was the first big thrill, I think it was equaled, if not passed, by getting an actual magazine like Aardshock, you mm-hmm. know, over there in, I think, Denmark. Back and there's your picture, you know, that we had taken some of that, and loved some.
Well, then it was the underground radio stations too that were that's playing right. us, and we were getting on their playlist up there with the, you know, like you said, Anthrax mm-hmm. and Metallica, all the big bands,
all the early days of metal.
Right. And there was Siren. It's like, wow.
And out of New York, Monty Connor, right? He had a radio show.
Yeah, that was
Monty
a Connor radio show, wasn't it?
Played on that.
Monty ended up being the president of Roadrunner Records for many years.
Amazing. Yeah, matter of fact, I reconnected with him not too long ago, just, you know, through the internet, and mm-hmm. he's like, dude, of course I remember you guys, and he sent me some playlists from back in the day, and it shows there's Siren, like I said, there's Metallica. It's like, man, you know, just, it was crazy.
So you're sending this stuff around, are you getting some buzz going on, are people responding? You mentioned obviously you're getting the airplay and you're in the fanzines, but are people writing you letters back type thing? Or
absolutely, there was lots of them
from all around the world.
Yeah, and that was the thing that was also amazing. I remember, Doug, at your place, you had a big world map on the
wall.
Put
the little pins with the flags in it everywhere where we got some response.
What were some of the countries that, like, you know, that you got some responses from?
We're all the way into Saudi Arabia and Russia. I mean, that was like the first.
It's getting around.
When Russia,
lots of Germany, lots of England was strong.
Let's say never Antarctica, but I think Greenland and Iceland.
Yeah, and the States, because fanzines were a big thing in the States too.
You were doing everything right. That's exactly how you built the scene.
Half a dozen countries down in South America too. We're on several radio shows in Brazil, and it was amazing to hear somebody talking in a foreign language and say the name of your band, and then hear them play it on the radio. It was like, whoa.
Yeah, because we'd get a cassette back, you know, a month later, 2 months later, that was the interview. You know, with us, and you can hear it's like, oh, that's Siren, Metro Mercenary. And then you'd hear us saying, hey, this is Siren from Brandon, Florida, and, you know, playing the song. And
trying to sound super heavy.
Oh,
we're Siren from Brandon, Florida.
I remember some of the radio things we did like that where we'd send back the answers because, like, I listened to them now. It's like, what was that? This is Eddie Bourne. I was like, what? Who am I? Why is I?
I got everyone's heavy back then. Lars always had a good one of, like, you'd try and look as tough as you could. And you always said the holding the ham sandwich picture where you would do this. Have your hands apart like you got a big ham sandwich in your hand. Yeah. All right, you guys know that I travel every week for AEW, and I'm on the road for Fozzy as well. But I don't worry about appliances or any of the stuff at my house breaking down while I'm gone, because we've got American Home Shield. And truthfully, I'm not a fix-it-myself guy anyway, so even if I was home and we had a leaky faucet or a faulty water heater, I'm not the one who's going to fix it. And unexpected breakdowns like that won't break your bank with American Home Shield warranty, because covered repairs and replacements are taken care of just like that. You just choose a plan that works for you and your budget. And then when a covered item in your home breaks, contact American Home Shield and their trusted and qualified pros will fix or replace it Based on the coverage in your agreement, right now you can get 20% off. Just go to ahs.com/Jericho and save that 20%. That's ahs.com/Jericho for 20% off any plan. American Home Shield, don't worry, be warranty. See ahs.com/contracts for coverage details, including limit amounts, fees, limitations, and exclusions. New Jersey residents, the product being offered is a service contract and is separate and distinct from any product or service warranty which may be provided by the home or building manufacturer. So got some good steam, got some good buzz, and then kind of where did things start going bad for you?
Well, they didn't go bad yet. We were actually still, the train was still rolling because we did that first demo. And then I guess it was after 6 months, 7 months in that demo, when we started getting that feedback, we were like, all right, we've got more music that we want to put out. So we did another demo, which was the Iron Coffins demo. That was a 4-song cassette. Now we did go with the cassette because it was just like, let's get this thing out.
So it's a lot easier and quicker.
Right. Same studio, same, you know, $15 an hour 8-track studio. And did 4 songs, one of which was the song Over the Rainbow, which became a fan favorite somehow.
It's kind of the culmination of the movie is Over the Rainbow.
Yeah. Over the years, very unique song that the guitarist Rob Phillips had done by integrating guitar hammer-ons, like as people might be familiar with you know, the late Eddie Van Halen.
And in 3/4 time, too, which is kind of unusual. Yeah.
Right.
What I love about it, too, is Doug's very theatrical. And for this song, I'm assuming it's about Wizard of Oz. He wears the witch's hat. He's got the broom in his hand. And it's like, I like that shit. It's very Bruce Dickinson. For no apparent reason, I'm just going to grab a broom for this one song. Yeah. And then the next song, I'm going to, you know, put some plastic wrap down on the floor like you did at Jericho Fest. Like, what's he going to do? Is he going to dump a pail of blood all over my stage?
I wanted to. I was just afraid somebody was going to slip and fall.
Yeah, I was on that later that night.
And it was going to be on my head. So I'm going to tone it down a little bit.
But so basically, we kept going with Iron Coffin. Often same thing, doing the fanzines, doing that, as is the case in bands in general, the inevitable lineup changes, occurred. You know, for us, it wasn't like Spinal Tap had their revolving door drummers. For us, it was bass players.
Join the club. Yeah. Welcome to Fozzy.
Yeah. And so after, Iron Coffins also was received very, very well, especially in Germany. It really, really started to pick up steam.
Oddly enough.
Yeah, because the song Iron Coffins, Rob Phillips was a huge history buff, especially when it comes to World War II and Germany. He's kind of, I guess, of German descent. And so he said to me, he's like, you know, hey, can you write some lyrics about the subs in World War II? They used to call it Iron Coffins.
There you go.
So I wrote the song just about, submarines in World War II. And the cassette went out. Everything was good. Lots of good response. But after, I think, 6 months of that, Rob ended up leaving and Ed Hauser, the bass player. So we almost did a full lineup, like a hockey line change on the band.
Mm. That's what happens, though, when you start with the, guys, Jimmy quit, Jody got married, and everyone thought we'd get that far type thing. And it's hard to find guys that want to do it, like, for real.
And, even though we were young and didn't have a lot of responsibilities, we still had to make live. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times it was like, okay, well, I got to work. I can't play. I had left the band myself for a time because I was my senior in high school. It's like, dudes, I can't play at a bottle club till 3 a.m. and then go to school at 7. Mm-hmm. But after, coming back, so bottom line, lineup changes. And we got a couple new guys in the band, Faxon Kotz.
Yeah, but let's get to the point of how things break up here.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, we had the Dead of Night demo, which was our third demo, strongest demo, I think, material-wise. We had really hit a good stride. And we just weren't going anywhere. It didn't seem like, we were going anywhere. Nothing was going on. So that's when, I was in school at the time in college, and Faxon wanted to leave for California. So I'm like, all right, well, and we ended up just splitting, the band, because like nothing was going on.
But in there, in between Iron Coffins and that split was the Dead of Night demo.
Right.
Right.
Which also split in there.
So finally, like you said, things happen, guys go their separate ways, and then Doug continues on for a little bit longer with Siren, but you basically are finished. what I'm trying to get at is, as we're talking about this documentary, is you basically at this point, you know, never play drums again. You say it when Siren broke down for you, you couldn't do it any longer. Doug continues on, same thing happens, and then that's it.
Yep.
Until, like I said, then, you know, in that time frame, 25. You're blessed with meeting Chris Jericho. To have no idea about any of this stuff, which makes me feel like a terrible friend, but you never really talked about it a lot.
Well, that's because it wasn't a thing. It was like, you know, maybe in passing sometime we had talked about, you know, you and I had talked about, yeah, I was in a band back in the day like you were. And it's like, okay. And at that point in time, especially, you know, in these ensuing 20 years, 25 years, Siren wasn't a thing. It was just something I did back when I was 20 years old.
Until what happened to change that?
Until 2015, late 2015, I started getting Facebook messages from people, and it was very strange how it happened. Just randomly, over the course of about a month, at least five or six people messaged me on Facebook, because I'm the only Ed Ayborn on Facebook, so it's easy to find. They're like, "Hey, are you Ed Ayborn, the drummer from the band Siren?" And I'm like, "Oh yeah, that was me." And like, "Oh, it's cool. Listen, I've been a fan for 30 years, and you know, I would love to, you know, find out more about the band. Do you have any old stuff? Do you have anything that's still available?" And with this many people reaching out over the course of, like I said, such a small period of time, I'm like, you know what? I'm an IT nerd now. That's what I do for a living. I can type fast. I'm just going to write down my entire history.
But what was it that kind of, you mentioned you got a bunch of emails all kind of 2015. Were you not getting any in 2010 or 2000?
No,
so just, was it just a twist of fate where this all came and happened at once?
At once. Inexplicably. It was just, I think in the month of December of 2015, and it was different countries, a guy from South America, a guy from Germany, a guy from Russia, unbeknownst to each other, with no other things. They just said, "Hey, is this you?" I hadn't done anything, posted anything.
That's so strange.
Yeah.
Like, just all at the same time. If it was a random one or two, but
then I'd answer them. But since they did it at the same time, I'm like, I'm just going to write down my memory of the band just for fun. So I did it over the course of a couple days and ended up being like 30 pages. Mm. By the time I finished, I'm like, okay. During that time, too, I was having fun. So I was reaching out to people who were in the band back in the day, like our guitarist.
Some comments from different people.
Right, and other people. And, you know, I wrote it out and everything. But the only person I couldn't reach was you.
Doug.
Yeah, it was Doug. Yeah, I couldn't find you.
And I was hiding.
Yeah, because Doug maintains a very low profile social media-wise. And so, I mean, I tried old email addresses. I tried old phone numbers that I had, but just couldn't find him. So anyway, finished this up, put a bunch of pictures into this document, which ended up being this book, you know, this accidental book. And it turns out when I said, okay, to my friends, here you go, this is my early memories of Siren. Here's the book where you can check it out. You'll probably see yourself in there. And a mutual friend of Doug and I said, "Hey, I'm still in contact with Doug. And you want me to send this to him?" I'm like, "Yeah, absolutely." So he did. And Doug, you know, eventually got it and read it and reached out to me, texted me. And we met up at a Chick-fil-A, I remember, and had lunch.
And this is the first time in like 30-odd years with some animosity between you kind of thing.
Yeah, because there was some stuff, as you'll see in the movie, that went down as
question
bands.
Marks.
Right. Because you even say that the band ended as a question mark in 1984 or 5.
Right.
So 30 years later, you guys meet at the Chick-fil-A and reestablish your friendship, which is the most important thing.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Right. And you know.
So were you upset with Ed, Doug?
Not really. No.
It's been a lot of years.
Yeah. I didn't necessarily agree with everything he wrote in the little Siren book, but, you know, I mean, everybody's looks at it from
you can see
their
his
eyes.
Point.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Right. It's all just,
it wasn't,
you know,
like we were arch enemies during all that time. Maybe that makes for a better story, but, you know, we just didn't. I know I saw you at a couple concerts in passing, but that was about it.
Right. But it had been at least 15
obviously,
years.
Obviously, like the same bands, and it'd be hard to avoid you forever. Not that I was trying to, but.
Right.
But yeah.
So you guys kind of reestablished your relationship.
Right.
And then
it got crazy.
Right. And this is where I was like, come on.
Yeah. Right.
No way.
So once Doug and I started talking, one of the fans that had reached out from Germany is a man named Frank Hernshaw.
Frank Headbanger.
That's the name. It's Frank Headbanger. And he is the ultimate Siren fan. I mean, he made his own Siren back patch for his vest back in the 80s. Got everything he could. He was just a huge, huge fan and a nice guy. He reached out to me, and like I said, it was one of those emails. So we had become, you know, email friends. And I said, "Hey, man, check this out. You know, I know, I sent you the book, but Doug and I are actually talking again. We're, you know, kind of, we're cool. It's cool." And he's like, "Oh, that's so good." He goes, I'm going to reach out because I'm going to talk to Oliver from Keep It True. I've asked him for years to have Siren.
And Keep It True is a big festival over there. Right. There's many festivals in Germany, but this is a very prestigious, respected one.
Yeah. And they specialize in bands that have either have not been together in a while or just hard to get together, you know, because the fans have want them. And I said, well, cool. But, you know, that's fine. You can reach out to him, but I don't know what's going to go on. We don't have a band. So he did. And strange enough, then we heard from Oliver Weinsheimer from Keep It True, who was like, hey, I hear you and Doug are talking. Would you like to play Keep It True? I'm like, what? I'm like,
this is a quick thing. It's funny because there's a great line in the movie where Frank Headbanger goes, if I could see Bruce Dickinson from Iron Maiden or Doc, I would choose Doc. And I was like, who the fuck is Doc? Oh, it's Doug. But how did that make you feel? Like, because once again, and I'm not saying this in a bad way, but you guys had this dream and then you go become, you know, quote unquote, normal people with normal jobs, normal lives.
Live life.
When you hear something like that, Doug, of somebody who says that they think you're better than Bruce Dickinson and are so pledged to your band, does that blow your mind of hearing
this? It did. I took off from work early. And oddly enough, I was working the Iron Maiden concert. So I came and met Frank on my break. Because he did want to see me instead of Bruce Dickinson.
Wow.
Yeah, that just totally blew my mind.
He was over in Florida.
Gotcha.
You know, and he's like, oh, can I meet Doug? I'm like, well, Doug's working the Iron Maiden concert tonight.
And that happens to you too, Ed, quite a bit throughout the documentary where you meet fans. There's a couple fans on there who are just freaking out. Siren is fucking forever or whatever. And I mean, and you're one of the most humble guys in the world. He gets kind of nervous when people come and ask me for an autograph. Ed has this little laugh. Like, and that's when they're talking to me. So how is that for you being such a humble? You're one of those rare guys. We say this in the movie. That no one has anything bad to say about, maybe at certain points in time, but everyone loves Ed. How's that for you when people come up to you and say, like, we love your band and you're so great or whatever they were saying?
Well, it's amazing. I mean, it's cool. You know, it's you don't know how to handle it other than saying thank you, you know, so much. And our experience being over in Germany, as I'm sure we'll talk about, was just mind-blowing because, you know, here we have people who were teenagers back when we were teenagers or in their 20s. Coming up and saying, I've been a fan of your music. I would listen to it over and over. And it's like, man, that is so crazy to think that here we are in Brandon, Florida, and we, you know, made this the record. And there are people with us on their record players just enjoying it over and over again. Mm-hmm. And like Frank was one of those people and just played that pivotal role in bringing us into the attention of the festival.
Right. And the thing is, it's cool. Is like you said, you get the gig. And once again, there's a great story of how guys are coming to the band. But you call Todd, who's been involved with you for years.
Yeah.
Todd's even, he's one of the Christmas elves and Father Christmas.
Yeah,
you and yeah, both you guys. So you put together this band. And like I said, we don't have to get into the minutiae. Yeah. But you got Hal in there, who's been there for a while. Yeah. And you got Hal, Greg,
original.
Who just becomes like
the
standout character in the movie. As we'll see. So you guys start practicing and jamming and getting ready for this. And here's where I wanted to kind of start my involvement in this. So Ed says exactly what he just told me.
Right, you're not going to believe this.
And I'm like, I didn't believe it.
Right?
I'm like, come on. Like, this doesn't happen. Like, you don't like not play for 30 years and then suddenly find out that you have a fan base in Germany who is putting you on this big festival and you're not opening the bill. Like it's right. You see it's Flotsam and Jetsam, Raven, it's Grim Reaper, it's Siren, there's four or five bands underneath you. So you guys have a fan base. And I was like, that's impossible. So either one of two things are happening.
You asked me.
What did I say?
Listen, you said, dude, listen, I don't mean to be rude, but is anyone going to care?
Yeah.
And I said, that's the same thing I asked the promoter. I said, I asked Oliver.
And then my other point was, okay, this is going to go one of two ways. One, it's going to be a complete shit show. It's going to be a total bomb. And that's something that I want to see. Or it's going to go great. And it's going to be the greatest feel-good story ever. Yeah. And that's something I want to see.
Yeah.
So I want to film this. I want to put together a film crew and document this, because we had just started working with Nathan Mowry, who did the Judas video and all Burn Me Out and Nowhere to Run and all those ones. So I said, what do you think about this? And Nathan was super into it. So let's talk about how you guys were approached. Okay, A, you put the band back together. B, you get a festival. Actually, reverse Lars. You got a place on a record before you had a band in Metallica. You guys got a place on a festival without having a band. So you put together the band, you get a festival, and now you want it. someone wants to document this as a documentarian. Was that a lot for all of you guys to you know, swallow at the same time?
It was for me at first, but just the fact that Ed was involved, and Ed came over and talked to me, and he says, look, man, I think we can do this. And if it had been anybody else, I'd have been, man, that just smells like a disaster.
Right.
But I knew me and Ed, if he was in, I was in.
So. Yeah, and Doug and I, when we were putting the band together, that's, you know, we first reached out to a couple of the original guitarists, because with Keep It True, they really want to keep things as original as possible.
Want to keep it true, yeah.
Right, and so we did that, and Rob wasn't available. Our guitarist Faxon was in California. He wasn't going to work. So I said, the first thing was, let's get Hal Dunn, original founding guitarist. And then I said, listen, Doug, if we're going to do this, I don't want to step on stage unless I know we have someone so rock solid as a guitar player that we know will be comfortable.
A ringer, yeah.
Yeah, and that's why Todd, who had been in bands with Hal, Tom McCarp, Hal was in Tom McCarp.
And I could have been in Siren back in the day, but you guys just never asked me back then.
We had standards.
And also, you never stopped playing your guitar right. teacher.
Different weight routes, right. like that Y in the road, but we're
so
close.
How was that for you, Doug? Because like Ed said earlier, you're kind of under the ground, under the radar. Now you're going to be, you know, exposed to the world, so to speak, with these cameras in your face and playing a festival at the same time. And you're the lead singer, which... Yeah. I am as well, so there's a different set of rules that we have to live by when you're doing these things.
I don't know. There's a lot of other circumstances going on building up to that that's made me – I was excited. I was ready to come out and be out there. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot – it just seemed like everything was falling into place perfectly. Yeah,
but it wasn't easy. It wasn't an easy decision to make. We had at least three calls when it was even, I don't know if we're going to do this.
Do the festival, do the documentary?
Do the festival. Okay. This was to even start, because it was, you know, like you said – It'd be a great story if the wheels came off, but we'd be the one in the car with
the
wheels.
I didn't want that, but I was like, I've been in a band for 20 years. It just doesn't work that way.
Right.
But this time it did work that way, you know? Yeah. And it seems too, Doug, you're very kind of a, I don't know if it's spiritual, but there's a great scene in the movie where you said you came out of your garage and there were some birds there squawking at you. And you said, that can't be anything but a good sign. Why did that seem like a good sign to you with the birds?
I don't know. It just seemed odd. They were just coming all around me. They were up inside my garage, and they were all over the ground. And I don't know.
This was the day.
It looked like they were just
show.
Looking at me, mm-hmm. trying
it
to tell me
like
something.
Just seemed like a good omen.
Yeah, it did seem like a good omen.
I have to say a quick thank you to Pretty Litter, because it's been so peaceful at my house lately. Nobody's fighting over cleaning the litter boxes, and nobody's complaining about how bad it smells where we keep the litter boxes. Pretty Litter's altered absorbent crystals trap odor instantly, and the crystals last up to a month, so less scooping out of the box. And best part, Pretty Litter changes colors to help monitor early signs of potential illness in our cats, including urinary tract infections and kidney issues. It ships right to our door, so no last-minute trips to the store. When we realize we're all out of cat litter, it's a win-win for my family, and it's a win-win for Mr. Mittens, Indy, and Snickers, my three cats. You and your cat or cats are going to love Pretty Litter as much as we do. It helps keep tabs on your cat's health and keeps odors down. Go to prettylitter.com/Jericho and use the code Jericho to save 20% on your first order. That's prettylitter.com/Jericho. Code Jericho to save 20%. prettylitter.com/Jericho. Code Jericho. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details. So then we you guys put together a warm-up show at the Brass Mug where
Nasty
you and I
Savage
saw...
Savage and Oblivion.
Yeah, yes. We saw Saxon there last year, which is great. But it was Nasty Savage Oblivion, which is kind of a Tampa reunion for this scene. Yes. And that's literally your first gig together in 30-odd years.
Yep.
So tell us about that night.
It was incredible. And you'll see in the documentary, people traveled from... What was the guy from?
Chile?
Or like
Holland.
Holland, yeah. To come see the show because Nasty Savage and Siren and Oblivion were coming back together, you know, and playing. That was just a mind blow.
Somebody flew from Holland.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
To Brandon to watch you guys play. And it's funny, too, because when we were putting together the documentary, Nathan at first had the guy say, I came all this way from Holland, and then later on he speaks Dutch. I'm like, reverse it. Have him speaking Dutch first. Like, who the fuck is this guy? What is he doing here?
Exactly.
You know? And that was one thing that was cool for me because Nathan kind of put it together. But then I kind of really put together the edits of some of these really great moments. Like, there's a great line where it's like Dead of Night is kind of the music that plays that ties everything together.
Right.
It's kind of always the the bumper.
The traveling
song. And there's a great point where you guys are walking down this old street in Germany. It's tough, heavy metal, leather, London leather boys, dead of night. Stops. Ring, ring, ring. Yeah. Ring, ring, ring. Guys on his little bicycle trying to get out of the way. Yeah. But there's a lot of those type of edits, which was really added to the humor, because there's a lot of humor in this too.
Oh, absolutely.
Because it's another thing that I was thinking, okay, great, you guys obviously, and you guys really are a great band. You got great material. And like the one guy says, there's so many bands that sound like Iron Maiden, but no one sounds like Siren. I sound like Pat Patterson there. but to kind of have like the humor, another thing that I thought is almost a fish out of water type thing, where you got a bunch of guys in their 50s. Yep. Now going through the airports, and great scene, Todd, of you and Hal trying to figure out Instagram.
I'm still working on that.
Snapchat, you know, and what's a filter, and I have no idea. Yeah, like, it's just great comedy, because now, yes, you guys are musicians, and yes, you have the band together, but now you got to go travel through the airport, which is something that you hadn't done. You said you hadn't been on a plane since 9/11.
That's right. But it was a lot of fun. We enjoyed it.
Yeah. And you're definitely right. It was definitely fish out of water, because traveling internationally, traveling to a show, it's like, what's going to be? What kind of gear? How do we get our gear?
You know,
that kind of stuff.
Who's going to get us around? Right. There's a scene where you can't seem to find, the shuttle to take you to the
right,
gig.
To the venue.
But then there's like we said, he's not here because of course Greg is still at home, social distancing, which seems perfect for him.
Yes,
he would not have come out, because one of the underlying themes of the movie, like I said, this guy that just pops out of nowhere is where's Greg?
Yeah,
because Greg disappears a lot.
Yes, he does.
And seems like just the sweetest guy, very excited to be invited back in the band. But another guy that's probably not quite used to traveling, because there's a great scene right at the beginning of the Tampa airport, and he disappears to go look at a clock.
Yeah, I legitimately almost lost him before we got on the first flight.
Yeah,
I mean, he walked up while the flight was boarding, you know, and we were all at the airport already. I was like, where the f*** did he go? And because his wife told me, says, please do not lose him.
Greg in Germany.
Keep
please.
An eye on him. And you'll see in the movie. I mean,
I won't lose him in Germany, but I might lose him in Tampa.
You're right, exactly. And Greg is. Greg is the sweetest guy. He really, you know, after seeing, I mean, we knew this, you know, but he just wears his heart on his sleeve. He's just a very, what you see
he's
is
a great
what
character
get.
for the movie.
He is, really but is. That's who he is. And, you know, you can see his emotions in the movie, when especially at the festival, when it comes real for him and what it means for him in his life, you know, it chokes him up. It's just, it's amazing. And
he, all of you guys, I mean, jumping around and all this sort of stuff, there's a great scene right at the end. And once again, when we'll talk about all this, when you guys do play the gig and it does come true, there is literally, I don't know, 5,000 people there, and they're chanting Siren, and they're singing, you know, Over the Rainbow and, you know, all of your songs. And the end happens, and you guys turn around and do your typical, you know, crowd bow, get the crowd behind you shot. And there's this look in your eyes where you guys are now, I'd say, 15-year-old kids. It goes even beyond 18. Like just seeing, like, you guys are smiling, and Hal's got this look on his face. Like, I don't know what Hal does for a living, but he just seems another guy. It's like, I can't believe it. Yeah. Like, I just can't believe it. And you take this great picture that ends up on Todd's gram.
I love it.
On the gram.
Saying we still got a chance.
But that's the point of this movie. Like, that's the we're trying to think, okay, what's it called? Because I said, it has to be called I'm Too Old for This Shit. Because I said to Nathan, before you guys even filmed anything, I said, at some point, somebody is going to say I'm Too Old for This Shit. And you say it twice, Doug.
Unprompted.
Prompted.
Yep.
And to see kind of the heavy metal fairy tale, some dreams never die. And at the end of that night, it happened. And whether it was just for one weekend, and we know that it's not, it happened.
Yeah.
And that to me is like, it's a lot like the Anvil movie. It's completely different, but the end of Anvil, when they go on stage in Japan, there's all those people. Like, it's a great moment. Mm-hmm. And I don't care if you are a musician or a pharmacist or a dog trainer or whatever, you're going to feel something from this movie, which is why I'm so glad that we made it, because it really, really does have this great storybook ending.
Yeah, no, I agree, and you're exactly right about the feeling that we had on stage. I was the 13-year-old boy listening to Kiss on my headphones, learning how to play drums along with that, you know, when I was standing there. And actually, I made it a point while I was playing, like as we were preparing for this, to mentally tell myself, listen, when you're in that moment, stop for a second and realize where you're at. and that this is exactly what you had dreamt about when you were in the garage, like with Siren, you know, in the warehouse or playing drums in the backyard in my first band. And I did. As I sat there playing, just was mentally like, you're here. You are living this. What you are seeing, people singing back to you lyrics that you wrote in high school social studies class. It's happening.
You know, my moment was when we came off stage, I walked right past the lead singer for Grim Reaper.
Steve Grimmett. Yeah.
And he's like, nice set, man. And I'm like, damn, man. I can imagine myself 15 listening to See You in Hell, you know, and just brilliant. Thinking how amazing it was. But that was my moment.
Really cool guys. We shared a dressing room with them. Yeah. They were super cool.
What was one of the things? Yeah,
what was for you that stands out, Doug, where you're like Todd just said, what was your moment of the night?
My moment of that night? I don't know. I guess it's like you said, in that picture, in that shot, it's like even before that, when everybody was singing Over the Rainbow, and I look down there at the end of the song, and they're all going, no place, no place. And I know it goes into that in the movie, but I mean, that's exactly what I was seeing. I was just going down the line, looking at people's mouths open, saying, no place, no place. I was like, no way.
Right.
they're really doing that.
Yeah. They were just so cool. Almost all of them. I was the new guy, but they knew who I was, you know, and it was just everybody there was just amazing. There wasn't I didn't see a fight. I didn't see anything. It was wonderful.
You know, and like you said, too, it's you guys were tight. You really could tell that you took it seriously. You didn't phone it in. But I also just love the fact, too, that like there is fans there that feel the same way that you guys do. We talk about Frank Headbanger. There's a couple of the guys. There's people that we don't even see anywhere else except for in the crowd at the end. They've been waiting to see Siren. And that's what I just love about rock and roll. You know, and Paul McCartney said this at a concert years ago. He said, I'm just going to take a second and just – I used to have this saying in WWE, drink it in, man. That came from Paul McCartney. He said, I'm just going to stand here for a second and drink it in. Exactly. This is Paul at 75 after playing for 50 years, 60 years, still wants to take a second to enjoy the crowd. And you always have to do that because it's easy. I'm glad you guys said that you had those memories because it's easy to do this show and be so intent and so worried about it. And you forget about the actual show.
Right. And you're like, what happened? I mean, I feel like I was, you know, in a daze, but that's why I was like.
You're living in the moment.
Yes, exactly.
Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants, price may vary.
So, talking more about kind of leading up to the show, it seems like you guys had a couple days beforehand to kind of acclimate yourselves and kind of see some of the areas of Germany, because you've been to Germany before. You came with Fozzy before.
Yeah.
Had you guys ever been to Europe?
No, I'd never been into Europe at all.
I'd been a few times.
Yeah.
I went over there to record the first album and the second album, and then I played in a German band for like 6 or 7 years called Mekong Delta. So I'd actually went over to record their songs and tour with them.
So gotcha. So you've been a bunch.
I was amazed how many people remembered me from that came through the autograph line before. But we were almost late to our stage call because people just kept coming through
the
line.
That's right. That's something there's a little bit of it in the finished film. But we had an autograph, you know, session beforehand where people come through. It was packed. It was like we did the full hour and there was still people. And that's something, again, like you talk about living in the moment, signing autographs. I mean, I'm a, you know, 50 something year old software engineer. Signing autographs in Germany is like, who does that happen to?
Yeah.
And I know the other guys felt that way.
And that's, like I said, I keep saying it again, but it doesn't happen.
It doesn't.
And that's why this is such a great movie. I'm selling it because I produced it, but still it's like dreams never die. You know, it reminds me a lot of Dr. Luther in AEW. He's the same age as you and got his first national wrestling contract after 30 years on the job. Just didn't work out and finally gets it and deserved it and is killing it because of it. But most people would give up and would say, oh, come on, whatever.
Yeah,
there's no way.
It doesn't happen. I mean, the analogy I use is like, okay, you were a high school baseball player. And, you know, it was great. And it was the glory days of your life playing in the high school team, you know. But you get out, you don't make it, you know, you don't get to the minor leagues or anything. It just, life goes on. You become an accountant, you got kids. And then all of a sudden the Yankees call you up, you know, out of the blue and say, hey, we need you to pitch an inning in, you know, this game in Yankee Stadium. You know, can you come do that? It's like, it doesn't happen. And that's
and,
the same.
And everybody in the stands wants to see you do
right.
it.
That's the right.
Because they watched your high school baseball game from 1983. Like, what?
Right. Yeah, because that's the thing. Somebody's got to care. You know, if somebody doesn't really are not interested in what you're doing, I don't care how great you are. It just doesn't matter.
Especially in that, say, Rich Ward has a great point in the movie where he talks about just how we both do, how intense heavy metal fans, especially German heavy metal fans, are. Oh. This is not a joke.
No. Yeah.
You know, and I even mentioned it. I talk about what they wear, and we see exactly. It's the leather with the jean jacket cut off sleeves with the patches and the leather pants and the boots and the heavy fucking metal and the not just long hair like we have long hair. These guys have hair like Crystal Gayle long hair that's past their ass, and that's just how it is. Yeah. You know, and if they don't think that this is real, you're not going to get that respect. Right. But they were waiting for, and these are 18, 25-year-old kids as well.
From young to old, and it's life for them. This isn't a fad. It's not a fashion.
And it's genuine.
It's a lifestyle, and they love it. But as Doug mentioned in the documentary, absolutely like stepping in a time machine. Because
like a time machine.
Yeah. And everybody says that too. Yeah.
Because it was legitimately like being transported to 1984.
Well, you had a great line too, Doug. You said it's not just I love the 80s, it's I love this little section of the 80s.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Right? And that's what kind of, you know, those, because we've played those type of festivals and we've had very lukewarm reactions at times. We're like, who the f*** are these guys? We don't care. But that was not the case for you guys. And like I said, like, this is not Rich Mendes. This is not Alice Cooper up there, or, you know, the Darkness is coming to town, or whatever. This is freaking Raven, and it's Flotsam and Jetsam, and Flotsam and Jetsam is on top, and the place is sold out.
Yeah.
And they love Flotsam and Jetsam because they've got 35 years of experience, and Jason Newsted came from there, and you better be heavy metal, or we're not even going to give you the time of day.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? And that's exactly how it was.
Did you guys, like, when you got there, were fans picking you up? Was that the festival that arranged all of that?
That was actually going back to the linchpin in this story, Frank Headbanger, because we were going over for this show. So we had arranged for him. He invited us to come over several days early so we could do some sightseeing, enjoy the country. So we were picked up by Frank's wife, Claudia, at the airport, and, you know, shuttled back and went out and hung out, and they just gave us the tour. You know, went to see a great little town called, I think, Bad Wimpfen. Took us on a walking tour with a guide, you know, to see all these historical.
Yeah, they were really nice. Yeah,
it was amazing. Greg food.
Greg climbs the castle wall and almost jumps out the window.
And then Heidelberg or Heidelberry, as Greg calls it. And here's something that happened. It's captured in the film. I'm glad it was captured because I couldn't believe it. There are two times of things that happened in this movie, which you can see happen as they happen. One, when Doug and I were walking down a street in Brandon together.
That's unbelievable.
In front of the band's old house.
That's
a guy drives up in a truck and says, "You guys in Siren?"
We're like, like it's 1984. Yeah. You know?
That looks like such a plant.
Oh, it does.
Yeah. It wasn't.
When you, what Ed's saying is they're at their old band house,
right,
which anybody that was in a band back in the day, a band house, a.k.a. a garden shed, that you could barely fit your shit in, and we'd be basically standing side by side. And if it was summertime, you're dying. And if it's wintertime, you're dying. And there's no time. So they're outside of their shed, and they're standing there talking, and a pickup truck in frickin' Val Rico or the hell you guys were, and some dude is like, "Are you guys from Siren?" Because I think Ed's wearing a Siren shirt or something.
And it's like, and he was a fan from back in the day.
And that was totally 1,000% totally legit. That's crazy.
But here's the other thing that happened that was also legit, which was crazy. We're in Heidelberry. And we're walking through the tourist, you know, in the square, and some tourist little stands and picking up some souvenirs. And we hear somebody speaking, you know, fluent English. And we're like, "Oh, hey," you know, and she came up to us and said, "You guys from America?" And said, "Yeah, we are. We're, you know, a band. We're here to do a show." And she said, "That's really cool. Where are you from?" We said, "Florida." "Oh, we're from Florida too. Where are you from?" "Val Rico." It's like, what? It turns out these people live literally a mile.
That's insane.
From where we are. And again, there were so many little points along the way of this whole story.
Some small town in Germany from some small town in Florida.
We meet in, you know, at the same place. And the same thing happens, as you see, there have been so many points along the way in what happened to us along this movie, which thankfully Nathan caught for the documentary, where stuff happened that was just incredible, from the emails coming to me to us getting back together to getting the show. We had one of the original bass player, Ed Hauser, was going to be playing with us, and we had practiced with him for several months. And then he ended up having to step aside because of his physical. His back from years of service in the military. And coincidentally, literally, from I hadn't spoken to him in 12 years because I'd
called. I left him a message 14 years ago.
To Greg?
Yeah, to Greg. to call him and say, hey, call me. Literally, it had been 12 or 14 years. And he calls me out of the blue a month before Ed Hauser had to step aside and said, hey, man, how you doing? And I'm like, who is this? He goes, hey, it's Greg. I know it's been a minute. I'm like, what? Dude, I go, you're not going to believe where I'm at right now, what I'm doing. Because you and Hal were working on songs, Todd, and at your school. And I said, this is what's going on. We have the chance to play this festival. And Greg was like, oh, man, that's so awesome. I'm so happy for you guys. And then it was, you know, I think a month later, I went over to Greg's house and say, listen, you know, by the way, Ed's not going to be able to make it. You know, is there any chance you can do this? And those kind of things.
You know, and it's funny, too, because like he says, and you believe this, he was just excited that Siren was back.
He was legitimately
not even like the agenda to try and be in the band or whatever. And suddenly he's in. And it's like I said, too, like there's going to be things that happen. But thankfully, nothing really bad happened. But there was enough of those moments. Like I said, something is going to go wrong. Great segue. Right. Here's what happened with Ed Hauser. Yep. Later on, something else happens, and now Doug can't find his passport, which is another great, like, how in the hell? Come on, man. I use that line to this day. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't.
You said that when I came to Jericho Fest.
Yeah.
And I was like, what?
Yeah. Dude, I sat with you guys for hours before you even knew who I was, because I edited this thing, and we were so into it. Like, it's like writing a book. Yeah. Should this be and or but? And you sit there for an hour, and, but, okay, it's but. That's got to be and. And that's what editing a movie is like. Right. And I'm not with Nathan to sit there. There's still, when I watched it back just yesterday, it's a great piece of film. There's still a couple little things that I would fix. But that scene with the, it doesn't make any sense. Kind of explain what kind of happened on that.
How many people were there in that moment?
Oh, eight, the whole, nine people. The whole band.
We passed that jacket around to everybody, and everybody went through it. And we all was not in there.
So you can't, and this band is jam-packed. Your guitar is on the top, and you're like, I thought for sure, like you said, when they slammed that door, oh, his headstock's going to break or something. Correct. So you guys are jammed in this van, and before you're going to go, you can't find your passport.
Yeah, like everyone had their passports. And
I'm not going to go home. I'm going to be stuck here.
Doesn't make any sense.
It didn't.
How long did it take for you to find your passport?
15, 20 minutes at least.
Yeah, because it's a long sequence.
We had to unpack a good half the van. Hour, yeah, maybe longer.
Unpack the van, look in bags, look under the van. My favorite is Doug.
I was freaking out.
Doug is when you're like, you go into conspiracy mode. You're like, maybe somebody walked by and picked it up. We're like, Doug, there's nobody here. But
that's when Ed just looks right in the camera. He's like, give me a break. And Frank's like, maybe someone goes to the toilet. Did you go to the toilet? So the moral of the story is this. Passport is in your leather jacket, which you guys checked 15 times.
In the sleeve.
It's inside the lining. Somehow from the pocket to the sleeve. It ended up sliding out somehow when I put it back on.
That's the old school of the jacket. You said it looks great on the outside. Inside's always the shits. So you put something in your pocket. I mean, if it's lighter all the time, you end up with a lighter.
Ends up down here, right?
Yep. You never get out.
Exactly what it was.
Who ended up finding it?
I did. I think somehow it from everybody handled and it had slipped down into the sleeve, and there was another hole in the lining, I guess, where your hand is. And when I went to put it on, it like ended up coming out my hand. And I was like, no way. Everybody looked at this jacket.
My favorite house, like, nothing up my sleeve.
Just a passport. It's funny because our drummer, Frank, that happens to him at least once a tour. He'll lose his passport. And it's same reaction. You know, like, dude, come on. Every time. I don't know where I live. It's like it's in his bunk or it's in his drum bag or whatever. So like I said, just give me your passport. I am going to hold this passport for the next 3 weeks. Yep. You're not allowed to touch it anymore. So there.
But I knew I had it. Right. I knew it. I saw it. I physically, it's got to be here.
Unless someone just drove by and took it. Here's why you should be getting Factor Meals. They're always delivered fresh, never frozen. They're chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and delicious. They're ready to eat in just 2 minutes. And if you go to factormeals.com/TIJ50 and use my promo code TIJ50, you'll get 50% off your first box, and 20% off your next box. Plus, how good is this sound? Parmesan and sun-dried tomato chicken penne with roasted green beans. That's what I had last week before heading out to AEW. Factor makes eating delicious, quick, and easy, which is exactly what I need, especially on travel days. I ate it right out of the Factor packaging as well, so no cleanup afterwards. So you can customize your weekly meals with as much or as little as you need, and you can pause and reschedule deliveries to suit your lifestyle. And Factor is celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals. So head to factormeals.com/TIJ50 and use code TIJ50 to get 50% off your first month, plus 20% off your next month. That's code TIJ50 at factormeals.com/TIJ50 to get 50% off your first month, plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active. We ended the movie at the right spot for the way that the story was told. What happened after the, you know, you guys get the picture for Todd's gram, which is great. Tell us about afterwards. Was there an after party? Was there just getting the hell out of there? Did you get a chance to talk to the fans after? Did you get a chance
to? We had a fight and broke up immediately. So. No, it was, what we did, we played, it's a 2-day festival. So we played on the first day, you know, as they're in the early evening. And so we got to spend the next day of the festival just completely enjoying the festival, which was
great. Taking photos, hanging out with people, drinking beer. It was great.
People that saw you the day before.
Oh, absolutely.
And actually, the night before the festival started, there was like a pre-party.
Yeah.
That's it was going on right about when we drove in. Then that one guy is yelling about siren. That was when we were first pulling in the van.
Stephen Bernard.
You didn't know that guy at all.
No, not
he was
all.
Just
no.
there. He's helping you with merch, and there was one point where I was like, "Dude, we got to edit this guy." He's just saying, "Siren is the best. I feel like a child at Christmas." And it's like, Nathan, it's 5 minutes. We get it. He loves Siren. Edit him out.
No, but it was great because that passion, and you see it even what was left in the movie. That's his name is Stephen Bernard. Great guy, and he was one of those guys like Frank, who we had never met.
Yeah,
who was a fan from back in the day, and was so excited that we got to be there.
Totally sincere.
Yeah,
he's
totally
a real
sincere.
Guy.
No, and we left, trust me, we captured him perfectly. And that's what I love. And like I said, when you said the next day, Todd, that you get to go to the festival and have some beers, like that's part of the fringe benefits of being in a rock and roll band. Mm-hmm. You guys deserve to have, that's an ego
experience,
boost, but it's a camaraderie.
Yeah.
Like you guys, we're all the same. We're just people that love music. And it doesn't matter who you talk to, whether it's us right here talking, whether you talk to Lars, I spoke to him the other night about watching YouTube till 4 a.m. He's like, I'm right there with you. We're all just fans. So when you get other people that appreciate what you did,
that means a lot.
That means more than you know, extra 100 Deutschmarks or whatever.
Oh, it really does. You know, playing music is great. And I've done it all my life. But like I said earlier, if nobody really cares, you know, does it really matter?
That's
right. So it really is important. Yeah.
And one thing that was, and I know it's in capture in the movie too, is that surprised us completely. Because there were, like I said, we were mid-card, you know, on one of the 2 days, and there was some big, like, mentioned Flotsam.
Who was on the other date, you recall?
I think a band reunited,
Raven,
Heavy Load. Yeah,
Heavy Load.
Heavy Load from Sweden had
Demon
come back together.
Was one of the headlines.
There were several.
But these bands mean a lot. Like, for me, the ones that I saw on your date, at Flotsam, I've got 5 of their records, and Raven was one of my favorite bands when I was a teenager, and of course, Grim Reaper. In Germany, these bands still pull and draw and make money. But the difference is they're there every summer.
Right. Yeah.
You guys, first time in 30 years, so continue.
So, So anyway, we had our merchandise there, again, which was, you know, a shirt part of this experience was that when it was announced that we were going to play, we were contacted by a couple of independent labels that say, hey, we want to release an anthology.
And that blew my mind, too. Like, what?
Yeah, an anthology of your
music. And this ain't some little chintzy thing. It's like a 3-disc thing. There's
3
posters.
Album vinyl set with a replica of our initial single. That's Underground Power Records. We put that out.
Patches and really stickers and shirts and toques and condoms and ice cream bars.
Yeah, it's quick coughing. But that was incredible to have these sets, which sold out. That's what we found out. The labels who were there, you know, who produced these, Stormspell and Underground Power, our CDs, the double CD sold out, the triple album sold out, and then our merchandise basically sold out. And we found out when we settled up at the end of the festival that we had the highest grossing sales of any of the bands.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was thousands.
That's amazing.
It is. It was like, why?
I'm sure that was the majority of your payoff was that was the merch.
That was our payoff. Our payoff, we didn't get paid to go to the festival.
Oh, okay.
We got our transportation and lodging was covered.
Wow. So they covered, that's rare.
Which is big.
A lot of times they'll just pay you, you know, 5,000 Deutschmarks all in, and you guys got to get your own.
You realize, by the way, that the Euro has been in place now for several.
I went to Hamburg in 93 and I never forgot.
But yeah,
we're talking about 80s heavy metal. It's a fucking Deutschmark. So the point is, usually they'll pay you euros and then you gotta
work
go
it out.
Search for flights, right?
Yeah, no, they took care of everything. Even we had to switch at the last minute, you know, with Greg and Ed.
Wow.
To
that's
do that.
Classy. So yeah. so the merch money was your payoff.
Money. Yeah, exactly. And we were just blown away. I mean, our as Todd is modeling, you know, today, our shirts are basically a black shirt with a white Siren logo. We're not talking high end because we have to buy
here,
we have
guys.
To pay for them. Yeah, we have to buy the merch.
There's another great guy on the movie who's like, I had to lose 10 kilos to fit in this shirt.
Ogre.
And it's still black. Ogre, yeah. That's the point. That's the point. It's black. It fits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ogre guy. It's a great guy. And so, yeah, that, as you mentioned at the end, so that was one of the highlights at the end for us of the whole festival experience, was finding out that, wow, this is, they actually, not only did they care that we're there, they showed it, you know, with their support. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then pretty much, you know, after that, it was quiet. I know we went back and hung out with some people, you know, and
gotcha.
Greg. So we left the night that night. We had to get to the airport very early. The shuttle was going to pick us up at like 4,
yeah.
I think 4 a.m. And I was sharing a room with Greg, and good funny side story in the movie about that.
Yeah.
But he's like, dude, I'm going to go out and have a cigarette. This was around 2. And I'm like, okay, I'll be hanging. We decided not to sleep.
And we never saw him ever again.
And literally, he just he comes back like 10 minutes before we're supposed to catch this shuttle. And I didn't find out until the movie, when he was doing the follow-up interview, that apparently, you know, at 2 in the morning, he had found a cat wandering around this little town and decided to follow the cat through the town. I'm like, dude, you're in a foreign country. We're leaving in an hour and a half.
Exactly. You know, you're still a foreigner with long hair.
Yeah.
You know, you're in Germany.
He had this moment with this cat, and the cat gave him a good tour of...
He said he's going to go back and find that cat someday. That's what he says.
He does love his cats.
Yeah. So, all said and done, very successful. We can see that in the movie.
It was a great
obviously
show.
We edited it that way, but because it was there to be edited.
That was
that
it. We can't get crowd chance.
It was pretty real.
Yeah.
And we really focused in on that. And the best part is, it's you. There's two parts. There's one that says, you know, you were the highest merch of the day, mm-hmm. and of course, the very end. Siren is currently working on a new record.
Yep.
Now, 2020 could be a complete wash due to, you know, no live gigs because of COVID, etc. Is there plans to do more shows? Is there a lot of interest? As Todd said, do more people care now?
Yeah. We actually were supposed to play a show this past summer in Germany, another the Headbangers Open Air, but COVID. So, right. You know, that was...
Have you heard about that, COVID?
Heard about it. Yeah. A few things here and there.
And
so is that one of those things where they just moved it to 2021, or is it just strike it out and try?
From what we've understand, they're moved to 2021. We haven't gotten any kind of confirmation,
gotcha.
You know, on that yet. But yeah, as it did say in the album, we had so much fun, the experience, because remember, we had to work for 6 months ahead of this time to work up the music and get everything back together. We had so much fun time making the music together. We're like, after we did the show, we're like, listen, let's do an album. Let's do that full album. So we did. We spent 2019 recording a new album, Back from the Dead, and we released it ourselves in April of 2020, and it's been incredibly well received. And it's still, so it's basically still new. We haven't really started promotion of it just because of everything that's going on.
Played some of those tunes on on Rock of Jericho and Sirius XM.
That's right. Yeah, thank you. And it was
thank you.
We're very, you know, very happy with it. Can I plug the website just to tell where people can go to
absolutely.
Find out?
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah, if you want to find out more, you can reach us at just www.sirenband.us.
Do you really have to say www anymore?
You don't.
No, but I don't think I do because that's what I do. So
you're getting on me for saying Deutschmarks. You're giving me www. Go out to the internet. Hit www. Period.
Connect to AOL. Put in your CD.
Hey, I want AOL.
I know.
We'll plug that afterwards as well, too. But those, just as we start to wind down here, I did show that movie to a couple of my friends over the last little while, now that it's actually out. So two of the guys that have seen it and have commented, one was Mike Portnoy, who watched it months ago. And tell us about that reaction.
Yeah, that was crazy because he reached out to me on Facebook because he saw I was wearing a Dream Theater hat in one of the shots. I was wearing a Dream Theater hat. And he reached out and said, you know, hey, just want to let you know, I watched the movie. I thought it was great. You know, love that you're supporting. It's like, dude, you're amazing. I'm like, it's crazy.
You met Mike before at Dreams Theater Show.
Yeah, through you. Yeah, as a guest, but briefly. So it's crazy. That's the kind of thing where it just blows my mind that people who I consider musical heroes are seeing some aspect of my story and my band story. It's like, why would Mike Portnoy ever,
It just shows you how powerful a movie like this can be. Yeah. When we played at Jericho Fest, Eric Martin, who is one of my favorite singers of all time, he came up to me and goes, oh, Mr. Tornado of Blood, I know you. Freaked me out, man. That is just the most amazing feeling.
Yeah.
Well, and I just sent the movie to Charlie Benanti from Anthrax. And just the thing that's cool to me is these guys actually take the time to watch it.
Yeah, that's very cool.
You know, and Charlie said I liked it. I felt Ed the drummer was the heart of the movie. Was that it for them?
Of course.
Was that it for them to play the festival? I said, no, they're doing more. He said, made me think of so many bands from that time that either got shitty deals or the members split, but this one ended up on a good note.
That sums it up.
A guy who's been in the, you know, he was sending fanzines at that point in time.
Exactly.
So is that cool for you guys? You know, like, okay, the Anthrax has seen it. You know, it's important. Amazing. Dream Theater's it's watched amazing. It. You know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I know, like, there was a moment when I found out, like, Wolf Hoffman of Accept and Andy Sneap, who is the guitarist in Judas Priest right now, watched it together.
Wow.
And I'm like, all right, the two of the biggest bands who are influences back in the day just watched the movie, our movie about Siren together, you know.
Wolf loved it and Andy hated it.
Yeah. No. So it's
did he get good response from
them? Yeah, they both loved it. They, you know, because Wolf, you know, Wolf had seen it and then he liked it so much he wanted to show Andy when they were recording the new Accept album.
Well, once again, much like my favorite documentaries, there is so much more than just about the situation and the subject that it's about. Like King of Kong, we've watched a great movie about video games. Doesn't matter if you like video games or not. American Movie, great video about the dream of making a film.
It's because it's relatable.
It's relatable, you know. And I've seen a lot of those types of movies, and I feel that Siren, you know, I'm too old for this shit, fits right in there. Like we said, you can watch this no matter what your vocation is and whether you. It's not like we're showing a 90-minute Siren concert. There's bits of the music to show what you guys sound like, but that's almost secondary to the story of this dream that did come true and is still coming true.
Yeah, very much so. It's definitely about the story. It's not, and it's not a movie about Siren. The Siren's not in the title. You know, it is legitimately about what it says, that some dreams never die, even when you don't know you had the dream, even when you set that dream aside so long ago that you forgot about it. Mm-hmm. You know, it sneaks up on you.
Right.
So, and that's exactly
And it makes you want more.
Yeah.
It makes you want to do more.
It's fun. And we realize that, you know, we're all very, you know, realistic about what the music business is like now and the fact that we're in our 50s and everything's changed. But just having the opportunity to do this once, you know, I've got, you know, like you said, that triple vinyl album in a big shadow box framed on my wall. It's like, who has that?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Who has a documentary made about it?
Exactly. No, it's really... and get to live that experience and have it captured. And thank you, by the way. I know I've told you before.
Yep.
Yeah. But thank you for, you know, having the insight and the belief that it would be a worthwhile story to tell. Because we just had to live it. So.
Well, and it was. And here's the thing, too. Like I said, like now that it's up on iTunes, to me, that's like such a huge reward. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because I got a mix of one of the new Fozzy songs, and the very next email was the word that Siren was now up on iTunes, which was a little bit of a surprise to us, but it was a great 1-2 punch of emails. And now that it exists in the world, because we can make this great documentary, and if nobody can watch it, who gives a shit, right? But now it's up for people to see, and we're going to continue to do the most we can with it. But to me, obviously, I'd love to win an Academy Award. But if 100 people see it, if 1,000 people see it, it's something that it's a document, literally, to this really great story of how dreams can and do come true no matter how old you are.
It's like the best home movie we could ever imagine.
Yeah, and people have told me, you know, just friends and family, that even though, you know, they know me or they know several of us, that it made them cry. Mm. You know, it just reached them. Something resonated. Yeah. It's so much emotionally in them from the story. that it's just, you know, I think it's a good movie.
Yeah,
just,
my wife cried. She's not a heavy metal, and right. obviously she knows you. But Doug, what are your thoughts after you watched the movie? Was it nerve-wracking to see it for the first time and kind of like, how's it going to be?
Yeah, it was kind of weird, you know? I mean, I had no idea what to expect, but I was amazed. I think it turned out great. But what's the line that Hal says in the movie? He says, there's no way this is going to happen. It's not going to happen. It can't happen. Oh, this is going to happen. Yeah. It's definitely going
to
happen.
Deep down in my mind, I thought, I think it's going to happen. They're going to ask me to join. You know? Did you guys have a big viewing party together when you showed it to the guys? Were you nervous too, Ed?
Yeah,
to show it to the guys.
Well, I was nervous the first time I saw it too, just to be like, okay, you know, what do I look like? How do I sound? Yeah. How does this story? Does it look like a good story? Yeah. And it was. So yeah, when we brought everybody together and watched it, we actually really enjoyed it. Yeah, it was cool. Absolutely. I think we all kind of felt the same sensation of being disassociated.
Kind of relieved initially that it's good, and then you can start enjoying it.
Right, and enjoying it from almost a third-person perspective. Yeah, right. It's like we
trying to see it not as ourselves, but somebody else that never saw it. That didn't live it would see it. So it was kind of being like an outside your body experience a little bit, but
definitely
it was definitely cool.
And I love the guy who played me.
He's great. Much better looking, but not as good of a guitar player, though. Actually, his guitar playing on screen was terrible. It's funny, too, before I ask the last question, seeing you on there, Ed, because you have lost a lot of weight. And when you see Ed, it's like, wow, you forget, like, oh my gosh, you have lost a lot of weight.
Yeah, that's one of the positives of 2020. I decided to just, you know, get my health in shape since I didn't really have any other health problems other than my weight. But yeah, I've lost 90 pounds. So looking at myself in that movie, when I look at myself, it's like, oh my God, what's that bowling ball on my neck, you know?
Last question, what's your favorite scene from the documentary, if you had to pick one? And I'll choose, for me, there's a twofold. I love Hal and Todd at the airport discussing what is Instagram and what is Snapchat and just filters, stay away from that, and I have no idea. That's a great comedic moment. And then that end shot of the guys' hands in the air with the crowd behind them with the look of amazement.
We did it.
Wonder.
Yeah.
We did it, you know? Doug, what's your favorite moment?
That's one of mine, too, where we're standing there with our backs to the crowd and the shot at the end of the show. But, I mean, I don't know. There's a lot of great moments, not just that. I know the one where I lost my passport. That's not my favorite.
I just finally
pieced, is it really?
Oh, I love it.
I just pieced together Iron Coffin's being on submarines. There's a part where you start quoting Yellow Submarine. I'm like, what the hell is he talking about? There's a man who sailed the seas in a submarine. I'm like, what? That's why I left it in there. Like, I don't know what tangent he's on, but he's on his own trip. I love it. But now I understand. Todd?
Well, it would probably be for me as a musician, just when we're playing on stage and that great audience that was totally into it. You know, I got to play a rock star for a day, and I had a lot of fun.
That's a crazy part in Over the Mountain, too. You have to play that the whole time
It took me about 6 months. My forearms are huge now.
Yeah, it's not just a little bit of an eruption.
Non-stop.
It's the whole
5 minutes.
Just the fact that you caught that part about the Yellow Submarine, that makes it worthwhile.
Dude, like I said, I spent so much time with this movie. I know everything like the back of my hand. I could probably tell you shot by shot what it is in my head.
I think for me, I mean, obviously the comedic side was great. But
cleaning the kitty litter?
I know. I'm immortalized now as scooping a cat box.
You're the kitty litter guy.
My dog's pooping in the front yard. It's like, Nathan, what's the theme you're going for here? My animals shit all over the place. But I think for me, one of the favorite parts, because it gets the emotion in me, I can feel it again, is when I was talking to that fan you mentioned, Stefan, and he was talking about how much it meant to him. And I could, because I was there and I could feel his emotion, and that made me, it choked me up, being there. And it's kind of captured in the film. And I think on a similar level, the part that I really just gets me is Greg when he was in the field alone, and he starts to well up because it's a gift he had never expected. And I think that's the way we all feel. Yeah, this is like a present that we never thought we would get, but we got to open it and it was just the best present ever.
And you can't make that stuff up.
Yeah, it just keeps on giving.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And now everybody can see it. The world can see it.
Exactly.
And hopefully when we get back to doing shows, you guys will be playing.
Yeah.
And we'll have to we did a viewing of the documentary of the Jericho Cruise. Maybe for the fourth one, you guys have to play it.
Oh, yeah. That'd be amazing.
That would be insane.
Yeah, I don't know if I can afford you guys. But
you'll have you talk to our agent. You might know him. It's Mark Willis.
Oh.
No, I got to see if he'll take us on.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you, Chris.